Highland Fair was a gathering place. Why we called it the Highland Fair is it was a fair where cattle were sold in the winter time. And as you know, there was no mass running that time, only there was a fair. And all the farmers from the surrounding districts, as far as maybe 10 or 15 miles away, brought their cattle in and stood them on the side of the street. And the buyers, or as we call them that time, truckers, they were gangsters, right? When I think of it now, would come and they would be buying the cattle off from the farm in the street, and they'd be handshaking and hand slapping, and some farmers would be satisfied with what they were getting, more farmers wouldn't, and that went on for hours. It went on from 5 o'clock. We would leave our own home in Milford, 7 miles away, at approximately 1:30 or 2 o'clock to walk to the fair in Chavon, and we could arrive there maybe at 5 or 6 o'clock after walking cattle that distance.
I loved this old shed when we were kids. We called it the old shed because everything in it was like from my father's time or his father's time. And like there'd be old clocks, and there's an old dresser, old mantelpieces. There was always something new somewhere if you'd rooted around long enough. And we used to take the clocks apart and put them together. We could never put them together again, of course. We were always in here making things, sawing up bits of timber and making trolleys, or there's even an old toolbox there where I had the side stone for the scythe, and I made that when I was about 10. It's still here. We live on top of a hill, which means that you're kind of exposed to all the elements. There's always a lot of wind here, a lot of rain, and the main type of farm that we do is mainly beef and sheep. And the last while we're starting to breed our own calves. And which means that we are going to the market as often as we used to, but in theory we shouldn't be, but we seem to be producing and getting more and more intensive. I mean, things have changed a lot around here in the last 10 years. Farmers got very competitive, and I think really the small farmers on the way out, and you have to produce more, and plus the main part of the farmer's income, or main part of our income, is from Europe nearly. I'm not at home all the time now. The younger brother's here farming all the time. But I love the land. I love coming home. It's kind of a break away from the city. And I think once you've been brought up in the land, you never forget it, and you always want to come back to it. And while I'd never be able to make a living off it, and maybe my notion of home is kind of very romantic, but I like it. I still love going off on my own with the scythe, because it meant I was totally away on my own. I always brought a book with me. It was kind of funny because I remember the first time he sent me out, I mean, the scythe was nearly twice my height, and I was sent down the back, and every now and again somebody would stop up, like a tourist or something like that, to take a photograph of me with the scythe, this little boy hanging onto this big scythe. I proud as punch, thinking I was doing a great job flying it.
In a 7-by, they were looking at a good strong man. There was mighty tension between farmers for a good 7-by, and they'd be always trying to find out, like, you know, if they could, would there be such a fella? We heard there was a good man last year, such a place, if he's there, I'll hire him today. But this would go on. Why they would hire a 7-by is you had a farmer with a family, with a big lump of land, good lot of old milking cows, horses did a lot of tillage, and he wanted a 7-by. Some of them hired 2 7-bys. And they had to do the extra work than the hard work.
And how long would they be hired for?
They'd be hired from the date, whatever date the fair would be in January, until Christmas Eve, which was the 24th of December. And it was, remember now, it wasn't the 22nd or 3rd. They worked till the dark that night on the 24th. I knew of them going on with their old bicycles and their old belongings tied up in it. And they overjoyed, gone out with a few pounds in their pocket home for the Christmas.
What was important, we say, from the farmer's point of view, in a 7-by? Like, what were the skills he was looking for?
There was no skills. The only skills he would ask, are you able to plough? Are you a good milker? And they'd refer sometimes to a dry milker and a wet milking. But the important skill was strength. I seen farmers make the 7-by take off his coat and show his muscles, and he'd say, "Jesus, his great muscles, they're like duck eggs. That's the fella for me, you know." And then he'd say, "Pull up your trousers." And pulling up their trousers, showing if you've hairy legs, he's in business, he's good for the job. And if you've hairy hands, he's good for the job. Yeah.
But what was the difference between dry milking and wet milking?
Oh, the dry milking was very important. You had some farmers, there was an old belief, do you understand, that if you wet your hands and you're milking the cows, that the cows just get what they call, admittedly myself, pock from too much wetting or too much milk. You pull the milk, or the first lot of milk was pulled down on the hands and just rubbed to the tits, and the tits were kept wet all the time, and occasionally the tits, if they were sore, it would affect them, the wetting milking, but the dry milking, no wetting whatsoever. And 'twas a technique, I never tried it, but 'twas a technique in itself, and there were some great dry milkers. And they'd just bring his cloth with him, they'd wipe the other, as we call it, the bag of the cow, the tits, and they'd milk away into the bucket, dry milking.
I used to always sing that tune or try and whistle it, and I'd be coming down here to work with the scythe down here to Dolan's. We call it Dolan's because we bought it off Jimmy Dolan's. You can see his house down there. That's where he used to live. He died there a couple of years ago, so we bought the land when he died. And I used to always whistle that tune. I'd be down with the scythe and I'd have my book with me, and I'd be as happy as Larry down here now on my own and working away at the headlands. Because, see, the tractor can't get in around there where I was cutting them there. You can't get in with the tractor there because it's too rough. And we're going to clear it away and do more like we did down in Clonrath, reseed it and plough away all the dirt and to make it more productive, I suppose, is the word you'd use. This land here is in my name, so I have a special love for it, special graw for it. And I spent many a day down here working away on my own, picking stones or, as I said, working with the scythe. The book I have here with me today is The Days of the Servant Boy. It's by a guy called Liam O'Donnell, who I met there a couple of weeks ago. And when I read the book, I had the impression of a guy who was going to be weather-beaten and sort of like a hard, tough man with big hands and, as I said, lines in his face from the harsh weather. But it wasn't like that at all. He was a man, he was from Cork, and he had a real Cork accent. A clever man, a cute Cork man now. He was full of life, full of energy. And I couldn't believe, I mean, I never knew anything about Servant Boy. I never heard of that going on around here. And I think that it didn't really happen that much here in the West because the farms were always too small and that people just grew enough to survive and that was all they wanted and they were happy with that. And there was no big farms then, not like, let's say, here today. So it probably went on mostly, I think, in the South and in the North and probably in the East as well. I found the whole thing fast. It was a whole new way of life. I mean, all I've known is like the EEC, and you know the way farming is going now is it's like mass production, and you know we're reclaiming land and we're putting up fences and everything is getting to be like straight lines, whereas the old farms, like what don't even here don't now see the stone wall along here, and it's meandering along, like it's not like a straight line, and there used to be a house there where that quarry is now, and you'd wonder about the people who lived there. Every now and again you come across like a horseshoe or an old bottle or a funny shaped bottle, and you know it isn't of, like we'd say, this our generation, that it came from a different time. You wonder what happens then.
When the deal was done, then you see the farmer would just take me, you see, he'd taking Charlie, and he said, Charlie, you'll have to have a drink. And he'd bring that, he'd give me magnesium stone, but there was no whiskey, because whiskey was too dear, to 2 or 3 pence or some 4 pence and that, but he'd give him those stones, which he, and he could have a magnesium stone or two. And I remember one very shrewd fella, he used to tell us, he wasn't drink at all, but when the farmer would bring him in anything he was hired, he said, "You'll have a medium of stout." "No, I don't drink, but I'll have a small player." The small player was the same price as the medium of stout, and he'd have his pocket full of small players maybe after the year. But they've come along then, you understand, but I remember one time there was this fella there, and he was he was a well-to-do farmer and a good neighbour, I'll tell the truth about him, with a big family. And he went and he had a share of cattle, and he got the help from the neighbours bringing the cattle, and he sold the cattle. And the wife came against him in the Hurston trap. And in the Hurston trap, he got nuts, she brought him home, and he had his servant by. And he had a few drinks in the town before they left, and he was getting hypnotized. And as the people, the neighbours would say to him, you'd hear him all over the countryside talking to the servant by now wasn't in the cat. Trap with him at all. He had his own bicycle behind. He brought his belongings in the bicycle, and he cycled his bicycle after the trap. And the farmer was riding the trap, and it was like you'd be going on campaigning for an election. You'd hear him shouting all over the place, questioning the servant by it, but talking loud in a way the neighbours would hear him, that he knew that they'd know he brought a good man with he the servant by hired. And then he pulled into a little passing village, and he had more drink. The wife had done a lot of shopping. And the servant boy, and he'd be inside, he said he was getting his dander up, the farmers, and the servant boy, he was getting kind of fond of the servant boy, called for a drink, and then he'd put his hand in his pocket, he'd put out his shoulder to her, and he'd throw it in the ground and say, "Pick that up!" And he'd be delighted to see the servant boy, and bloody like you talk to a dog today, you know.
And where did the servant boy sleep then?
Well, he slept inside in the back kitchen. He might have a back kitchen there that would be attached to be a new offer there. Off of the main building, where they kept meals and where they kept every kind of rubbish, or otherwise, there were a lot of them kept them in the loft. The loft was a famous place. That was a up maybe over the hay barn, or maybe over the cow house, or it could be an independent little house. I remember having built little independent houses where they keep probably harness or the horse underneath, and they probably keep potatoes and different things. And then the boys would have a ladder, and they'd go upstairs, and they had their own bedroom up there.
And what would the bed clothing be like?
They'd have the best of an eider down. They'd have a horse cover for an eider down. And they'd have a few old blankets. Then they had no mattress. The mattress that time was all old bags sewed together, and it filled with straw. I remember being at home. I remember, as a matter of fact, that teasing out the straw in the month made have it dry for the mattress, an old mattress of straw, and they might have now what they call a tick. You never heard of a tick. Now, a tick was like a bag. It was like a calico sewed together. They used to have the flour bags, and they would wash them and dry them, and they'd sew the flour bags together, and they'd make a tick out of it. And into that they'd put the goose feathers or the hens, for anything that was plucked. They would keep a lot of fowl in the farms, you know, and the feathers were always being kept, and that's what the tick was. That was to put over the old mattress for a servant boy.
First thing you have to do is clear away all the stones first, get them out of the way. There's no point trying to build it up. Well, you could build it up, but there'll be a cross at the beginning, it'll all fall down very quickly. So you have to build it up, take away all these stones first. Oops, it's close. There's a knack into it. I'm not that good at it now, but a fair idea now. Right, so first of all, you clear away all the breach, or what we call a breach or a gap, till there's like nothing left in the wall. There's just like a hole, and then what you do is you pick up the biggest ones and you leave them down there beside each other, and every stone is like a different shape, so you have to try and twist them and turn them so they fit into place fairly solidly, like that. And you build up like two rows, one on the outside and one on the other side, so you have like almost two walls being built at the one time, and you build them up like that. And when you have them up a fair height, like about two or three rows, you pile in the smaller stones into the middle of it. Put all them small ones into it.
The weather's got very cold the last week. It's been an awful change. It was very mild up to this and warm. And so now it's getting really cold, and we've cows calving and yo's lambing or having lambs. And you have to really watch them. We're up half the night with them, watching them every night and that kind of thing, because they're not able for the cold weather, and they're very weak when they're having lambs, because they're giving everything to the lamb. Anyway, this should stop them from jumping out here again. Sight of traffic. Are nearly built up. I won't be coming out here again. Oops. We'll take a break for a bit. But this farm here now has changed an awful lot in the last 10, 20 years of my lifetime. And I remember this. These used to be all little small fields, and we've cleared away a lot of the ditches and made into one big farm. Like, farming's getting really intensive, and if you don't get intensive now, you won't survive. I think the day of the small farmer is nearly gone now at this stage. Like, we've had to sort of branch out in different areas. We've got our own cows, and we have our own bull, and he bulls the cows when they come in heat. And we have our own calves, and we're trying to bring up our own stock all the time, trying to cut out, going to the mart and buying young cattle, which was what we always did. Dad would go to the mart and he'd buy what we call store cattle, as in young cattle, which we would then finish off, keep them for the winter and feed them silage and that, and finish them off till they were ready to go to the factory or to the mart. But the idea of buying cows is that we'd cut out all that. But funnily enough, because you have to intensify and get more numbers up, we're still having to go to the mart a lot.
Now, servant boy in the morning, what would he feed the cattle, and then
when you get up in the morning, first thing of course you get is a quick cup of tea. Then he was out, and as I stated, in some of the places like they did, you see, the day before, they throw the hay down off of the hay barn. There was no bales of them on your loose hay, and all along the cow's heads there could be a single wire, it could be a double wire, like we call them wires now, but they were all cows at the time. And the cows, you see, would be backside to backside along, and there'd be a distance of about 5 foot between the cows, where you back in the horse and cart and clean it out. And his job in the morning was to go into the cows' heads, all along the cows' heads. There was a good wide passageway. There was hay there. His job was to go in the morning and put the hay out. It was a quick kind of a job, like handy. You put the hay out over the little wall, out to the cows. They were all tied up. Well, of course, in the winter time, you see, there would be just a stripper maybe to be milked, you know. But no matter whether it was winter or summer, when the boy had his cup of tea, then when the summertime came, the whole lot of the cows were milked, but they were not brought into milking all the time. They were milked out of Ireland. They were all milked outside, the majority. Unless a man had only five or six cows, he'd bring them in or seven. But you'd see the whole lot of the cows being brought into one corner. The dog was trained to this. You tackled the horse or the donkey or whatever the case may be, a pony, and you brought the children out to the field or wherever the cows were used to it. When they see the dog, they'd all come on and into one corner, and they were all milked there by the milkers in one corner, and the milk was strained into the churn.
There's a fair bit of work done now before the breakfast.
Oh, yes, they had. You see, they had got a cup of tea, you see, first before they went out, a quick run, and then just to the breakfast when they came in. Then all the work was done. There'd be 2 hours at it, maybe sometimes 2.5, and they'd come on then, you see, and what they'd do is there'd be one man then, you see, and Bill to go to the creamery when the things were big, like, you know, and the farms were big, and he might have come in front of him, got a good bit to eat and be ready to take off the horse and cart for the cream.
What would happen then, we say, after breakfast? What was the routine for a servant boy?
The routine of the servant boy then after breakfast, as he was, we'll take, for instance, if the springtime was like up to April, there was the planting of the potatoes. That was a kind of a big job for a good few days. And then you had to get and prepare every one of these servant boys or horsemen or were able to work with horses. And then they'd be preparing ground for to sow turnips and mangoes and you name it. And then some farmers did the cash crop. Like, you know, it was great that having out there you had the cash crop of beet. And they'd be ploughing and preparing ground for beet. And I'd give days and hours, which I did myself. I often walk for hours. I often give up 10 or 11 o'clock at night walking after a pair of horses harrowing ground. And I'm telling you, when you'd have that done for a day in the morning, whether you'd be fairly, you wouldn't be anxious to be fooling around anyway.
Now, what happened to the dinner time? Where would the servant boy sit and where what would he eat?
And the servant boy would arrive into his own old nook at dinner time. And the setup of the servant boy was he had the old back kitchen. And that back kitchen was for the servant boy, and if there was a servant girl there, she'd be on the same lines. And the eating was plenty of bacon, plenty of cabbage and plenty of turnips. And as they was telling me at the time, they loved the turnips and they drink mugs of the turnip soup after. Or drink mugs. It was great for their stomach, man. They always said it was great to better than any sauce, which it was. And it's today, especially with bacon. Oh, it's the best medicine you can get. But they'd have an old tin plate then to be like something you'd see in Gunga dinner in the army or somewhere. And an old tin plate and a old knife and fork would be there. And this old tin plate would be after seeing many servant boys through the house for years. And as when the lad says, yes, it was white and it was bought it. Said, but it's black now because all the enamel is off it, you know. And that's what they'd have. And there's a plenty of spoons. There's no scarcity of eating, you see, but they ate there, you see, and they did their own washing up too, and they was referred, as going back to the dogs, one for his refer, he said, geez, there's no very easy wash my old plate, I throw it to the dog, and he licks it clean. And he did that to me lick, and he'd put it away, and he'd eat the poor boy, and he'd have that again tomorrow. But that was it. I was some lads are good and tidy, and they'd clean the place out, you know, and they'd make their own stuff. They had an old fire there in the corner, in the back kitchen, that there'd be some cooking done there too, and they'd make an old supper here there for themselves. And
would they be used to knives and forks now?
Well, how they'd be used, not at all. No, the majority wouldn't. Even I see my trashings now at them. I see the craters peeling spuds of their nails. They were like, they wouldn't. Jesus, well, those big families, rare and poor people. Right, they'd be delighted to get them. I see fellas getting knives and forks, and they wouldn't bother to hurt them. I see the poor fellas, God love them. I see him taking up the fat meat in the fish and eating it away.
That cow had to be milked out because she's only the one calf, and we have twins actually. For the first time in about 30 years, we've two sets of twins, and it never happened before. I never seen twins in our farm before, but this year there's been two sets. And the problem there is that the cow that the twins are off, she has enough milk, and they're getting sick and ill and that kind of shivery with the cold. There's an awful change in the weather today. And but this one anyway is only one calf. So we had to milk her out because she gets stops and starts and that kind of thing. So that's why I was milking her out. But I'm going to try and get her to suck, get the twins to suck off her, see which she takes them. But she'll actually be tied up. She's a bit wild. But it's not so often now I have to milk a cow. But I do remember when we were young, like at national school, myself and the brother, and we'd often have to, we'd take it in turns to go down to Dolan's where the cow used to be, and we'd have to milk her out and for that milk for the house, like. And what do you call it? You go down there and you're in the rally shopper before you go to school, and you'd milk the cow and bring her up, and Jesus, and surely to God, like some mornings it happened that she kicked the bucket over and all, there'd be no milk in the house, and they'd have to go in and buy milk, which was seen as sacrilege at that time. And I used to hate it when the cow would go onto the silage or the hay, because there'd be an awful taste of milk for about a month afterwards. And then when you got used to the meat and the silage and the hay and the taste of the milk, then that they'd be coming back onto the grass and they'd be let out in the spring, you could notice the difference in the taste again in the milk, and take another month to get used to that. But we never bought milk until very recently. I mean, I remember when we first started buying milk, it seemed like a sacrilege almost, and we used to keep our own, like potatoes and carrots and onions and turnips over at the back field there. We had a few drills there, but you know, it seems the way farming, the way things are going, that too busy now for that, and you have to, it's watch your cattle and watch the cows and make sure that they're all right, and watching them every night, and that the ewes lamb okay and the cows calve all right. And no, we don't farming has changed completely from that subsistence or growing your own vegetables and that kind of thing, because you just don't have the time anymore for that kind of thing. It's much easier just to go into the shops and buy them, which is a bit, I suppose, ironic, really. Anyway, I'll try and get these two cows to suck.
When the day's work was finished, what happened? What did the servant boy do then? Or did he go out, or would he get himself ready, or shave?
Oh, he was, yes. He got his own quarters, and they must be delighted to have their old house, the lofts, like, although they were not the thing, like, you know, they were, it was, as we say, not 100%, but they'd be delighted for privacy. They wanted to be away from the family life, and he'd have a good shave then, and he'd go out socialising for the night, and...
What would he use to shave?
Sometimes you see the shaving, if they could. I often heard the fellow saying, Jane, if I could sharpen a knife, I'd shave with it. Because blades were dear at the time. They'd have a three-hole razor. Some of them used the open razor, but you had the old folk like that, the open razor, and these younger lads were getting modernised, the three-hole razor, that was the blade, the safety blade. That's the first blade I ever remember coming out in three holes was Max Mile. He was smiling, turned upside down on the other hand, his face turned the other way. But they'd buy a Max Smile, and that cost a penny. And that would do them nearly for a month. Because they developed a technique that no one would, that like, it's strange when you're cutting a corner, you know, and it was handed down to them. They could edge a blade, an ordinary for a safety razor, with a wine glass, we call it. And they'd put it into the wine glass, and they'd hold the finger against it, and they'd roll it over the head and change. They'd be counting a 7 now, 6, 7, and they could, and they often kept that for a month, more months, because
What did they do for a social life? I think you mentioned the book as well about car drives and gambles.
Oh yes, that was in the winter time. It was mighty. Card playing was mighty. And once in the winter, which was in October, came in, there'd be gamblers all over our part of the country. The gamblers, even the small farmers would have them, but mostly the people in the cottages would have them, and the poor people. But small farmers would have them too. And it was a mighty night of the gamblers. There'd be a pair of cocks maybe put up. And there might be a pig. I remember a pig put up one time, and this fella, all the seven boys would come from all around the place, like, and they'd be to the shilling playing, and they'd be playing all night, and then they'd be playing for pennies, because whoever would be knocked out, you see, there'd be a knockout then, until the system was just fine down to the last two. I remember the seven by one night, he was playing with Jez, he was in the look, the pig, it was a pig was put up, and he won the pig. And all the lads were there, and I know him, and they said, what do you think, how do you feel? Jez, he said, I'm in an office day, sitting down here at the fire, he says, I'm just wondering, will I eat him a drinking?
Would there be musicians there and dancers?
And all these seven boys came, they were all brilliant. They were brilliant musicians. They were brilliant at the concertina, the melodeon, the violin, some great violin players, the Mozarten. They'd play anything, they'd make music out of anything. Anything at all. And you'd have the lad with that tin whistle, the clear lens, they came out great musicians.
And the dancers, what would the dance on?
Well, the dance, there'd be a dance at, would like there'd be a Sunday night dance too, you know.
Yeah.
Sunday night dance was a great sort of one, because like the thing about it, in those times, see today it's Saturday, but in those times, you see, you had no dances of a Saturday night. Saturday night was observed alone for going to the church, going to confession, which was an important thing with those days. Yeah, I always went to the church on a Saturday night, and a Sunday night it was the dancing night, and they kept themselves to the veins of nicely for Sunday night, and everything had to be deadly after it. They were smoked wood by New Year's Day during the week, and they'd smoke the packets of players of a Sunday. They wanted to show off to the woman, you understand?
Mm.
And they'd have the shoes in, as Rod Lance said to him, he'd have the shoes shining now, so when he looks down, he'll see his face, and the toes of the shoes, they'd be sure shining. They'd have everything spot on. And they'd cycle to the dancers. The dancers could be maybe 5 or 6 miles away, they could be 20 miles away, but they'd cycle no matter. And when they'd be going to the dances, They put on the old boots, going and they're cycling the old boots and the old clothes, and when they come within, which was a half a mile or thereof, they put into the ditch and they take off the old boots and they take off the old trousers, put on the good trousers, whether it be snowing or raining, and the shoes, and they were game ball for the night.
And what would go on? Would there be boys making shapes at the dances? Or
huh?
Would there be boys making shapes, or would they be fighting? Or
oh, mighty to the world. Oh, Christ, yes. But to see the thing about it, was great that time. There was no knives that time. There was a good, decent fish fight. A fella now might have his eye in a woman, and he might be going with her, do you understand? And another fella would come up, and he'd go to take her off. This is the going on, you see, at the dances, and the wall, excuse me, waltzes. And a row developed. And when the row developed, you know when the row developed, you see the fella throw it off the court and turn his cap back. Because they might be wearing caps and they'd wear them dancing and turning the cap back, and the lads say, come on, follow him out in the road, and they'd be a ring made outside the road, and they'd be able to shout to one another and to be all over, and that was it, no more about it. Oh, yes.
It's late in the evening now, it's about half nine, going on 10 o'clock. And we call this field Connors here, because there used to be Connors, I think they used to live here at some stage or another. I don't know where the house was, or there's no sign of it now. But this land here is about 3 or 4 miles removed from the house. It's about, 100 acres or more in it. It's getting kind of windy now, cold. But this farm now is under the REP scheme, what we call Rural Environment Protection Scheme, and what that means basically is that the whole farm has to be, if it wants to benefit these grants, they have to agree to a 5-year plan, and in that 5-year plan you agree to fence your farm and to drain it and to look after the environment side of it, like there's no pollution going from the slatted shed down there into the water stream. And this fourth here that we're sitting on, this will be under the protection. We did a lot of training on this, and we got grants, and the first grants came in years ago, but Jenny, it must be over 10 years ago. And myself and the brother and the father, we picked stones from about, I think it was about 20 miles to 30 miles of drains all in these fields here. And at the time, it was kind of wondering, would we take away the fort? But I think we decided against it. I don't know whether superstition or what it was, but we kind of liked them anyway. You can really, this farm has really intensified in the last, let's say, the last 15 years between the draining and the cleaning. I mean, this field here that I'm in here, there's about, I don't know many acres in it, there's about 20 to 30 acres in it, and it's feeding a sight of cattle now and sheep. And, if I remember when we were a kid, that all this field here now, it's like one open sweep, and this used to be like ditches and hedges and rushes and, you couldn't. I remember trying to get cattle out. You'd be running through ditches and in through hedges, and you couldn't. It was an awful job to get them out because they could run around. Practically run rings around you. You're supposed to fence all your drains and your ditches to stop the cattle from going down, so that they won't pollute or break down the breaches and that kind of thing. Also, it's to help the flora and fauna to grow down in the ditches, and it's a good thing. It's promoting wildlife, and it means that. It's good for us too, because we get the farm modernised and we get it cleaned up and don't worry about cattle thieving or straying or anything like that. We are also not allowed to cut our hedges a certain time of the year, like when birds are nesting at this time of the year and that kind of thing, and so that they won't, that they'll be able to have their eggs hatch. All this field was ploughed and was reseeded with peas and barley, which we wrapped up into round bales for silage for feeding for down the slatted house here. So we could feed the calves and that, and it was great feeding and it was great stuff. And then we reseeded it, and you can see it in the grass here. Well, there's been unnatural grass growth this year anyway, but this year was unbelievable. It was like aftergrass almost. But we put on a few more sheep onto it and a few more bullocks on it, and they've eaten it down.
And what did the girls had sort of ways of making the makeup last and that.
Well, they had just the great hotel, of course, got helping to say again, going back to the money, the famous girls would love to powder their faces and they'd love to paint their faces, you see. And the paint at that time was the red tabby. There was a red tabby at that time, and no matter where you, what you're doing, if you damp the red tabby and rub it your hand to leave the red on your hand, and what they'd do is they'd keep the red tabby and they'd colour their face and be for two red cheeks, you know, they'd be like, you know what they'd be like at all. They'd be like the sun going down with their cheeks red. And then they'd be doing the eyebrows. And how they do the eyebrows is they'd bring out, they'd written a bit of a stick first in the fire before they lay, and burn that and leave it black. And they'd roll that up in a bit of paper. And when they get into that, sometimes they might do up the eyebrows before they come out. But if it was raining, to be a, like, they'd be, to be all over their face, they'd be like, they'd be like, they'd be an Indian painted down, streaks down their face, you see. But they'd wash that off. And when they go into the cloakroom, then in the dance hall, they'd rub on this, they'd take this stick, burn stick out of the paper, and they'd rub it onto their eyebrows and all. Jimbo.
I mean, Clonraw here has really benefited from reps and from modernisation. It's feeding a lot more cattle. It's a lot more organised. It's better for my brother and my father during the winter, because all the cattle are inside. There's no cattle outside, and the shed is nearby, and we can cut silage. We're keeping the middle field there in silage, and we cut silage and just draw down right beside the shed and feed them, and there's no problems. A lot cleaner, a lot easier way of going on. Like, I hear people talking about the good old days, and, you know, things were better back then, and they weren't better here anyway. They weren't, from what I hear from people. Things were a lot harder. I mean, things are, farming is better now. If you have a big acreage, you have to have the big acreage or you won't survive. You have to get your numbers up, because you won't survive otherwise. The profit margin is too slim on each individual beast or sheep.
Now, would the servants, boys and girls, would they mix much with the farmers' sons and daughters?
Well, of course, playing hurling, they had to mix. But dances, no. Oh no, mix at all. You might have the odd servant boy who dances the farmer's daughter, but because she'd be trying to invite him then, or you'd have the odd farmer's son dancing, which is like a servant girl, he'd dance her, but they'd be saying to him then, you know, give note about it, you see. And, oh, Jesus, class distinction, you could cut it with a knife, that time was desperate.
Would they look down upon them?
Oh, Jesus, your Christ, they were terrible, God help us. There was no protection at all from. There was just a servant class, and that's it, no more about it. And you hear him saying, oh, Jesus, did you hear such a folly? He's going to serving girl. Oh, God help us, he was a farmer's son. You know, though, Jesus, some of them married him, and they made great partners, and did bloody well.
But we say a servant boy married the daughter of a farmer.
Oh,
they,
he was...
They couldn't stay.
Oh, not the sort at all. Not at all. Not at all. Not a hope in hell.
They'd have to go off.
Oh, they'd have to immigrate straight away, because they wouldn't be wanted around the locality at all.
Mm. And what about, like, when at meal times, was there much, like, say, a distinction there? Or did that ever annoy you to see them being sent
off? Oh, yes, I was at even the trashing. I was at the trashings, and it was very sad, the trashings. Like, you know, when you think back of it, like, all the farmers around there would have 2 and 3 days thrashing. The odd one might have an odd day or something like that. But what happened then is when you went to the thrashing, like, you'd be the farmer's son, you'd be taken to the dinner. And when you go to the dinner as a farmer's son, or all the farmers, they'd be all taken in the front doors, and the servants would be all gone to the back door to a special old place for themselves. 7 boys, and they were great lads. It was a shame to lose. But the years have crowded past us, and the fledges all have flown, and the nest beneath the sugar loaf no longer is their own. For a hand has written finish, and the book is closed for good. There's a stately red-tiled mansion where that old slab dwelling stood. There the stranger has her evenings, and the formal supper spread. But I wonder, has she trimmings now, or is their rosary said? Ah, those little Irish mothers passing from us one by one, who will write the noble story of the good that they have done? All their children may be scattered, and their fortunes wineward hurled, but the trimmings of the rosary will bless them round the world. Right? All right. Let's go in there.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.